Welcome to The Holistic Entrepreneur with holistic nurse practitioner, success coach, and best-selling author, Bonnie Gressel. Bonnie and her expert guests share tips, tools, and strategies to achieve success on your holistic entrepreneur journey. Each show features answers to common entrepreneur challenges, along with a healthy dose of support and motivation. Now, please welcome the host of The Holistic Entrepreneur, Bonnie Gressel.
Well, welcome everyone. This is Bonnie Gressel, your host here at The Gift of Choice. Now today, I have a fabulous guest to share with you. Jessica Pettit is here, and I'm going to introduce Jess in just a moment. But first, I want to take a moment to thank all of you for taking time out of your busy day to share with me here on the show. I am so honored that you do that all over the globe. It's just still amazing to me. Thank you so much. Now, I say this all the time, but I truly do believe that a holistic entrepreneur is really more about who you are than what you do for a living. You come from that heart-centered place, from that place of service, and you want to make a difference in the world. And perhaps that's you, and that's why you've decided to join us on the show today. So if this is your first time listening, welcome. And if you've tuned in before, welcome back. It's going to be another great show. Now, I know that time is our most precious asset, so I want to make sure that all of these shows are value-packed so that you feel your time was well spent, and you won't be disappointed today. Now, I always have the link to our guest, and she's offering an awesome gift. She's going to tell you about that on the show, and those are in the show page below, as well as my website at BonnieGressel.com and the Facebook page to join me and lots of other entrepreneurs who are on the journey. So check out those links and investigate. So without further ado, allow me to introduce our guest for today. Jessica Pettit pulls together her stand-up comedy years with 15-plus years of diversity trainings in a wide range of organizations to serve groups, to move forward past abstract fears, to actionable habits that lead teams to work together better. With a sense of belonging and understanding, colleagues can take more risks with their ideation, they preserve precious resources through collaboration, and they maintain real connections with clients over time. Join me now in welcoming Jess Pettit to the show. Well, welcome, Jess. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day. And I know you're a busy person. So thank you so much for being with us here at The Holistic Entrepreneur.
Absolutely. Thank you. And thanks for talking about how important it is to pull all of these elements together.
Yeah, you know, I read a little bit about people in their bio, obviously, but there's always more to the story, right? Would you share with us a little bit more just about your journey and what brings you to the work that you do today?
Well, I thought what was most interesting about the connection between my work and your podcast is I think it's really important that being an entrepreneur is by far the hardest physical, mental, emotional, spiritual journey that I have volunteered to do. And I think that that's a key piece, but because my work is mostly around diversity and inclusion, that is also draining and exhausting and motivating and momentum building. So I see a lot of connections between my topic area and the method in which I do it. I think that it is a constant growth and a constant struggle of where I am and has been my whole life and whole career.
And we all deal with those struggles of many kinds, don't we? But how do you help others to sort of get through the struggle, the grind, the rut, the whatever they feel they're in to just enjoy life more?
I think that my message actually saved me from burnout. And now that I've written the book and I've kind of switched around what it is that I do and how I do it, I think the idea of being good enough, a lot of people immediately kind of balk at that because we live in a culture that's about perfection and exceptionalism. And I think it's really important to do good. And a lot of us, I think, including myself, can easily be overwhelmed and intimidated by the very high bar of only doing superior. And if we can lower the bar to trying to try, then I think we open up creativity, we open up innovation, and we open up ourselves to being more vulnerable and authentic through challenging or complicated situations or difficult topics. And that in itself is more life empowering and invigorating.
Oh, that is so true. You know, there's a quote that I love. I don't even know whose quote this is, but it kind of goes like this. It's that perfection is a character defect. And I really kind of believe that's true, because we all strive for that, but yet it's not really the place to be, right?
Right. Well, I think it's an impossible, ever-moving goalpost. And what I realized in my own research is that it really is a commonality that fuels most of our excuses as to why we don't try something new or engage in a complicated situation or conversation.
Oh, absolutely. And I know people, and you probably do too, Jess, that, you know, are trying to create something, whether it's a website or a product or a program or whatever, and they never get it done because they're trying to get it perfect. And that never happens. And so 4 years later, they still don't have it done.
Right. That it's not just a lack of follow through, but it's a lack of belief that trying and giving it the effort that you're capable of giving it actually does matter.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love the title of your book, you know, Good Enough, you know, because I think that's so true. What you were mentioning before, that it keeps people stuck. And I think perfectionism, as well as many other things, is sort of paralyzing, and you just can't do anything because you can't in your mind do it perfectly. So just good enough. Let's talk about that. Maybe share some of the things that you either have in your book or how you work with clients, or when, I know you do a lot of public speaking, when you do presentations, how do you help people feel that you're good enough? You don't have to be perfect.
Sure. So I think that my overarching premise in my work is do the best you can with what you have some of the time.
And some of the time. Oh, yes. Let's talk about that. You've got me curious now.
It's kind of the antidote to perfection, perfect all the time, always, or nothing, not ever, never. Doing the best you can with what you got some of the time allows you to try, allows you to be open, curious, generous, authentic, vulnerable, and instead of just kind of using those words, it's really about being present with what those elements actually mean in your connections and relationships, whether they're long-term or even just passing someone in a grocery store. So my book is broken into the three parts, good, enough, and now. And the idea of good is that I actually believe that at the heart, we are all good. Including the people that frustrate you, including your boss, including your person you're dating or married to or divorced from, and including that like troll on Facebook. I believe that there is a goodness in everyone. And so I start off with like a self-assessment of being able to understand not just who you are, but who they are inside of this particular model that really kind of simplifies how our lives have taught us to be. So the question I always ask people, when right now your listeners are probably like, wait, I know someone who's really frustrating, there can't be anything good about them. I always ask, like, what if it's possible that it's possible? So like double layering the possibility allows you just a little bit of a moment of kind of new breath. And that new breath really allows you to kind of lean into this relationship or the interaction or the conversation in a way that allows the possibility that something in their life has taught them to show up this way. Something in your life has taught you to show up this way. So it's out of being the need to feel safe and prepared, right? So if ultimately we can give grace to each other, that's really important. The second part of the book, Enough, really is about noticing our patterns and our habits of excuses, as well as kind of the magical kind of Jedi skills that we seem to have, that when we are in love with what we are doing, which is referred to often as the flow, or when what I call a crucible moment has happened, and you were really able to persevere through a really challenging situation in your own life, this enough is kind of a reminder that we are our own gas pedals, and that we can accelerate and deaccelerate at any point in time. And our excuses and our motivation come from that same place. And it is enough to at least try, right? And then the last part now is really about making a commitment to occasionally have a better connection and an intentional conversation and be responsible and self-aware of how you are entering that conversation and have a conversation that matters.
And, you know, you make a good point in your book, and I'm sure it's in your book, but you make a good point about how, I mean, we're not meant to live in isolation. You know, we're meant to have relationships. It's a dynamic, our lives are dynamic and forever changing. And so that coming together with people and seeing the best in someone else, the whole diversity topic, I mean, How do you help people to move past, say they're in a group, whether it's an organization or a family or whatever, and they're not getting along, right? They're not seeing the good in each other. How do you help them to communicate better and to, you know, just be better to one another?
Yeah, I mean, without sounding cliche or like a capitalist, I'd say read my book. I think that after doing 15 years of diversity and inclusion social justice-based trainings, what I realized was that this kind of, yes, there is some import of this external acquisition of new knowledge or new experiences or collecting friends from different places or vocabulary words, but if it's not being internalized and taken responsibility of how that information does or does not align with your own lived experience, then it's not changing any power dynamics. So instead of kind of gathering kind of these external pieces, I'm flipping it inside out because that methodology didn't work. And I'm starting with you, me, individual level. How did your lived experience show up? And how did it teach you how to be with others? And instead of focusing on why they're different or they're frustrating, why don't you focus on how you're different and you're frustrating? And sharpen those skills. I like to call it a subliminal diversity training, and it's working.
Well, and I'm a believer that everyone does the best they can with what they have at the time as well. And do you sense that more people believe that, or more people don't even like think about it?
Well, number one, I disagree. I don't think most people are doing the best they can with what they have at a time. I think most people think the tools that they currently have isn't enough, so they're not going to try. And my whole method is, our message is about like what you currently have is what you currently have. So instead of waiting for the opportunity, like go, try, do. You know, it's interesting if I do reflect back over through my life, without getting into a therapy session. My mother died when I was very young, and it's a very expensive therapy statement. My dad did not handle that very well. And a decade or so later, my father, who I basically was completely estranged from, who really mistreated my brother after the death of my mother, about 10 years later, my dad decided he wanted to apologize to my brother. Don't worry, I have a therapist. He never wanted to apologize to me, but he wanted to apologize to my brother. And he had this kind of soap opera dramatic idea of what this was going to be like. And it was going to happen over Thanksgiving. And it was just going to fix everything and bring all the family together. And it was going to be perfect. And I knew he was telling me about his plans. And I kept saying, like, just write him a letter. Just pick up the phone and just have a conversation right now. And he's like, no, I want it to be epic. I want it to be amazing. I want it to be perfect. I was like, that he needs an apology. Like, just apologize. Don't worry about the theater of it. He's like, no, I'm not ready yet. I have to prepare. I have to really think about my words. I want it to be perfect. And I don't want this to be dramatic, but I think that this is how a lot of us avoid trying with something that might be difficult or challenging, is that we set it up in our minds that it's going to be perfect. And my father passed away November 11th. So now, 20 years later, I'm the only person who knows that my father was going to apologize to my brother And that's made it worse for my brother. In some ways, it's kind of made it worse for me. Mm-hmm. And my dad didn't just do it, you know? And so I don't mean to like be quoting Nike commercials here, but I think most of us know what we think we're competent at. And so we'll try that. But we're just as aware of what we don't feel competent in, and we rarely try. And so my whole point is try to try. And even just saying try to try, you kind of lean forward, and that leaning actually does start providing a space for momentum to build.
Hmm. So you're coming from the premise that people don't necessarily do the best they can with what they have. They just don't even try. They don't even go there.
No, they completely avoid it.
Okay.
I mean, people avoid humans, people avoid topics, people, like, let's take politics right now. Like, one of the things that keeps coming up in my work as a keynote or as a trainer, even as a consultant, is, well, everything's been bad since the election and we just can't talk about it. Well, sorry, there's elections all the time. You're going to have to figure out how to talk about this, you know? And so my approach is that if everyone, like, let's take being polarized. We're being told as a culture right now, we're very polarized. So I'm not doing anything to polarize. So then it must be you. So if I engage in a conversation with you as if you're the one who's creating all this polarization, we're not actually going to have a good conversation. The truth is, about at least the presidential election, is a quarter of the eligible voters in the United States actually voted, not everyone. And of the quarter of eligible voters that actually voted, most of them voted for the candidate they voted for because they were not the other person. So we have that in common. Now let's talk about democracy. And if you can reduce it down to a moment of like, it's complicated, it's not easy, but it's certainly significant, then I think you can try to have a conversation. But what most people do, in my belief, is categorize it as an untouchable and then just worry about it.
Hmm. And don't actually take action. Don't do anything about it. They just like maybe grumble about it or whatever.
Right. Or create stories about other people and what's wrong with them.
Mm. So how do you get people past that? I mean, how do you get people, say you're working with a group, you know, work group or a whatever group that is in that space, the space that you just described. How do you get them to move forward?
Well, I mean, this is every day of my life, right? So even doing what I just did with the presidential election, mm-hmm. I usually try to mention Trump and Hillary within like the first 5 minutes, because that's okay.
It gets their attention, right?
Well, it's the most nervousy thing when people are mandated to go to a training and somebody with tattoos and multicolor hair walks into the room. They're like, So I try to get that out, because when you reduce it down to, first off, the vast majority of voters didn't vote. Okay. So then a slim portion, a quarter of the people who could vote did vote, and most of them voted for the candidate they voted for because they were not the other person, then you can kind of feel the pressure release in the room, because I'm not calling anybody a horrible name or a name that doesn't even mean something horrible, but we've made it mean something horrible. I'm saying we actually have something in common. And that most of us voted for the person that we voted for, if we voted, because they were not someone else. Now, let's talk about our democratic system. And what does that mean, that we're making leadership choices based on somebody who isn't, right? Now, how does this show up at work? How does this show up in group dynamics? How does this show up in parking lots or in movie theaters when you pick and choose where to park your car or which seat to sit in? So I break down the topics that I know people are most worried about into the most simple, easy, yet very complicated and significant realities. So then we can actually have a conversation. It's like letting the steam out of your Instapot, you know, like, we can do this. It's actually the same skill set. You can have really challenging conversations with people who are really close to you about certain topics. And even the people who are really close to you, there are certain topics you'll never talk to them about. Why? Why don't we just literally do the best we can with what we have, who we have, some of the time, then we can actually be prepared for what it feels like to be uncomfortable or to not know something. We can become better listeners. We can understand that people have different lived experiences than us, and that our individual lived experience has really informed our perspective. See, like, shh, don't tell anyone, but this is base skills in most diversity workshops. But if you lead with that, people come with their own positive or negative bias about what the experience is going to be like. And what I'm trying to do is help people take responsibility for themselves and the relationships and the communication or connection opportunities they have every day.
Hmm. Well, and I would imagine, I know I was watching a video before we got on our recording today. And you do, I know you do a lot of public speaking in large groups, but also you do some small group stuff. And I would imagine that your background as a stand-up comedian is really helpful in some of those situations to sort of help to break the ice, so to speak, a little bit as you're getting into some of these really sensitive topics.
Absolutely. I think that my use of humor is imperative to go to the places that I go. So when we think about like breaking the ice, it's such a great visual, is that often breaking the ice is kind of thought about only at the beginning. Because you have a group of people and they're like, what's this going to be like? And then you break the ice and they're like, oh, this is going to be okay. And then they kind of dive in. I think my work comes with multiple layers of ice.
Ah, okay.
So I say something funny, I say something really deep. I say something funny, I say something really significant. I say something funny, I say something they're nervous about talking about. I say something funny, I say something that's like naming the elephant in the room. I say something funny, I am able to do real, actual work down to the individual level, whether there's 10,000 people in the room or I'm doing a board development and there's 10 people at a table.
So you're using, it sounds like, a series of pattern interrupts. I mean, you start one thing and then you interrupt it with your humor.
Or weave it in, I think. Yeah. So.
Awesome. That's an amazing technique. I would imagine that's really, I would love to be a fly on the wall and sort of observe that as you're working with it, especially the small groups. I mean, bigger groups, you know, there's a different vibe. It's a different thing. But when you're working with, say, 10, 12 people, and they're all like, I don't want to be here. I would love to see you in action in that kind of situation. And I did watch a little bit of one of your videos that you have on YouTube about that. And it's like, you know, to get people smiling at the end is maybe a goal.
Well, this year I'm actually releasing mini videos every Tuesday, I think is when they come out, if I remember correctly. And I record them in advance. And so I get behind my own release times. I believe they're on Tuesday, but they're called Conversations That Matter. Mm-hmm. And I take a different, difficult thing and break it down in 3 minutes or under. And that's what I do, no matter how many people are in the audience. And the videos are actually getting some pretty good traction because they're timely. So the very first one, for example, was on sexual harassment, because that's kind of up.
Yeah.
And the example that I used was I was about to keynote a conference of after-school educators. So there are probably maybe 300-400 people in the audience. And a woman got on stage to do kind of literally an icebreaker, so kind of had everybody dancing in their seats. And she was going to be right before me. And right before her was the Department of Education or Secretary of Education for the state, who seems to be like, he's younger than me guy, and he gave a really powerful speech about the importance of after-school education. And when he got off the stage, this person, this comedian who got on stage to do the icebreaker, was heckling him and being really inappropriate. And eventually, I would definitely say, was sexually harassing the Secretary of Education for the state. And you could feel the power of his message leaving the room until it got so brittle and staticky that people were really uncomfortable. And the reality is that if the comedian had been a man and the Department of Education had been a woman, the Secretary of Education, or the man in the scenario, would have instantly lost their job, probably, right? That just wouldn't happen. And because it was a woman comedian, you could feel things getting really brittle in the room and no one really knew what to do. And the Secretary of Education or Department of Education guy was kind of at the back of the room getting breakfast from a buffet and blushing. And so finally, it was my turn to take the stage. And I think it's really important to role model what I talk about, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know what to say. I've not taken a class. I'm not certified in, like, how do you deal with inappropriate comedian behavior? But something needed to be addressed. I wasn't going to be a bystander to it, but I also needed to get people, like, in a different place because I needed to give a keynote and people were, like, cringing, right? So I just took the stage and I said, you know, with everything that's going on in the world right now, it's a really great example of sexual harassment. That's inappropriate. Okay, now let's go. And for the rest of the conference, the attendees, the members, the board members all came up to me and said, like, that was so brave. Mm-hmm. That was so courageous. Thank you so much for saying something. None of us knew what to do. Thank you so much. And the reality is that I didn't know what to do either. And I don't know that it was brave, but it was important. I don't know that I said all my words correctly. I probably could have said it differently somehow. But what matters is that I recognized something needed to be said. And so I did, you know, and I think it's really important that whether it's a small group or a big group or even a one-on-one conversation, you're responsible. You're responsible for your intentions and you're responsible for your impact, even if they don't align. And I don't think you can really claim that responsibility if you're not self-aware of how you show up. Who and how you are in those conversations is, that's your job. Mm-hmm. So get to work.
Yeah. So just do it. The whole Nike thing again, right?
Yeah.
But I love the saying though. So, you know, I know that people are busy in these days and their brain is probably full of stuff and things that they've already heard today. If people could only remember one thing from our conversation today, Jess, what do you think the most important thing is that you would like them to take away?
The most important thing is very easy and it's the thing nobody will do. So I always like to set it up this way. I double dog dare you right now. Don't, unless you're driving, don't do it if you're driving. But right now, take out a sheet of paper, preferably a post-it note and a pen. And I want you to write down, do the best I can with what I have right now. Do the best I can with what I have right now. Write that down, stick it on your forehead, stick it on your computer, stick it on your desk, whatever you need to do. And the next time that you can feel it in your stomach or you get a headache or you're like clenching your teeth or you're dreading some kind of conversation or topic, whether it's with your kid or your coworker, a stranger in a parking lot or somebody on Facebook, I just want you to read that note. Do the best you can with what you have right now. And I promise you will enter that conversation, one, you'll actually try, and you'll start with a certain amount of curiosity, generosity, vulnerability, and authenticity, like that kind of combination that will lead to a better connection. That's a conversation that matters.
Mm. Oh, I like that. That's a great golden nugget to share with everyone. You know, I know that people are going to want more of you, Jess. They're going to want you to speak at their organization and know a little bit more about you, about your book. Tell us how they can get more of Jess Pettit.
Sure. So my website is goodenoughnow.com, goodenoughnow.com. And if you do goodenoughnow.com/survey, there's a silly baker's dozen question. It's kind of a self-assessment tool that kind of is an introduction to the model that I created in the book. It's 13 relatively silly questions, although it is scientifically reliable because I'm a dork. But the self-assessment will kind of help you figure out how you might more typically show up in troubling conversations or enduring challenges or just kind of on a regular basis even. And it'll call you out and tell you what's probably frustrating about that for other people. But goodenoughnow.com or jess@goodenoughnow.com. That's me.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking time because I know you're just about to leave again, and I know you're a really busy person, so I so appreciate you taking time today to share your insights with all of us here at The Holistic Entrepreneur.
Well, thank you very much. And we're all busy being either holistic or entrepreneurial, and the idea of doing both of them makes us busy. So even if you're busy, sit down and breathe every once in a while. It's helpful.
Great reminder. Thank you again, Jess.
You've been listening to The Holistic Entrepreneur, hosted by Bonnie Gressel. The Holistic Entrepreneur has been brought to you by M&B Global Solutions, your source for individualized coaching for entrepreneurs and authors, along with book editing and publishing services. To learn more, go to mandbglobalsolutions.com.